Welcome to the Pitch Vision Academy Cricket Show. This is half an hour or so of cricket coaching, helping you improve your game or improve the game of others. It's a team of three. My name's David Hinchliffe. I look after things here, and the rest of the team consists of two very fine cricket coaches. The first is the Director of Cricket Coaching at Millfield School. It's Mark Garraway. Hello, Garris.
How are we all? We're okay?
Yeah, you must be getting your final preparations ready for heading out to the warmer climes.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We've got a few weeks to go until we get out to India. So, yeah, very spintastic at the moment in the programme. Looking forward to getting out and getting a bit of sun, maybe a little bit of smog on our backs when we're out in Mumbai in a few weeks' time.
Yeah, fantastic opportunity, especially when it comes to playing spin. Secondly, it's the cricket professional at Portsmouth Grammar School. It's Sam Lavery. Hello, Lavers. How's it going?
Yeah, really well, thanks. As I mentioned to you just off air previously, we've got a glorious day down here on the south coast.
Oh, yeah.
Not a cloud in the sky, and I'm spending the majority of it in the sports hall.
Yeah, lovely. Yeah, better weather than early April, yet everyone's indoors.
Absolutely.
That's cricket in the UK for you. One of the questions that have been coming up quite a lot recently to people who send in their questions to the show has been around the age limit for playing cricket. Of course, we know cricket is a great game to play almost any age, and I know of guys who play cricket well into their 80s, so I don't think there's too many limits on actually playing itself, but limits on becoming successful at cricket to a level where you could count yourself as a professional. We do get this question coming up a lot, and recently it's come up quite a lot from people who they've gone into education, they've continued to play cricket at a certain level, but they've never really broken through into the professional level. And now they're thinking, well, you know, I'm getting to a stage here that I want to see if I can make it. So I know it's something we discussed before, but it's certainly worth going over again. What do we think about the kind of markers for ages and where people should be and how much opportunity you've got, how much that window closes as you get older?
It's the kind of question that I get quite a lot as well, with obviously loads of young cricketers at school and they're going through the county age group type stuff, and they've got one eye on what they're going to be doing when they're 18, 19, 20, and for a lot of them, the first choice would be try and play professional cricket, and obviously there are other things that are going on with university options and things like that, but I do really stress to them that if they don't get the contract at 17, 18 years old, then that's by no stretch of their imagination is that the end of the road for them. The opportunities that there are to continue playing, continue sort of developing yourself through to 22, 23, and those university years are really, really strong. And I think if you can put yourself in the right university, that gives you an incredible opportunity to keep training at the level you have been, or even putting yourself in a sort of professional environment where you're going to be very, very busy, but you're going to be training hard. You're going to get lots of educational opportunities, but you're going to be allowed to mature alongside your cricket for a few more years, and that can sometimes be what's needed, that it's a little bit of personal maturity as well as having skills and having fitness levels and that kind of thing. So it might be that just allowing you to travel on a little bit further can help, and I definitely recommend that if any of our players are really, really desperate to make it, then obviously you want to play cricket to the highest level you can for as long as you can, and that doesn't mean that when you think you haven't made it, you pack up tools and you stop. If you want to be as good as you can, you keep pushing. But generally, definitely through to kind of 23, I would have said, definitely keep pushing yourself and keep your expectations. I wouldn't say keep your expectations high, but it's keep challenging yourself and keep knowing that there's an opportunity out there. When you go beyond that, obviously these opportunities and the likelihood of things happening are probably going to drop away a little bit, but we usually recommend that guys are really pushing themselves through that university period, which will be 3 or 4 years for most of them, taking through to sort of 22. 23 maybe, and then have another year beyond that of really committing to your cricket as much as you can. After that, yes, I'm sure there'll be a statistic that says that those gaining their first contract after a certain age will have less and less chance, but you can always be the one who bucks the trend. You can always be the guy who comes in at 20, 26, 27, the David Byers, who then goes on to captain the county for however many years and score God knows how many runs. So there are opportunities for people to buck the trend. The norm is going to be that people will be definitely within the system or definitely recognised by the system by a slightly younger age. But don't let that tell you that the door is completely closed.
Yeah, I just think we're in an age where there are the opportunities because we play different formats of cricket now. There's three formats of cricket. I think people can have got different entry points because of that. We also, as Sam's just talked about, the pathway route. There are different pathway routes into the professional game to show that the validity of your runs and your wickets is credible enough and valid enough that you can be selected. So I think in probably the game that we're looking at now is that 2020, that the game where maybe at grade cricket level or premier cricket level, somebody sticks their hand up, does something pretty exceptional over the course of a season or two seasons, and then they can be given maybe a short-term contract to start off with to play some 2020 cricket and then see where that grows from. So, yes, I think David Byers is the example in English cricket, but I'm sure that there are others from all over the world that come into it relatively late, but I reckon we should be keeping our eyes more open now, looking more to those grade cricket and Premier League cricket than we ever have done before, just as we are beginning to look into university cricket for that point of difference player now, because we are understanding that people do, particularly in cricket, mature at a slightly later age to some of the other sports that are out there, like tennis or swimming. So the more we have understanding around our decision making and when people can start to peak and put their hand above the parapet and say, pick me, the better, really. So David Byers should be, in 20 years' time, an example of lots of examples of people that have come into a cricket later and done a good job in the professional game.
OK, let's wrap up this section with a little bit of news. And as this week is dedicated to the PB Jobs section, here is Sam Lavery with the latest jobs over at PB Jobs.
Yeah, well, as always, lots of jobs online, so lots of opportunities for people out there in different parts of the world. One that's local to me, there's a couple of positions over at Lymington Cricket Club, which is a great opportunity to work with their junior cricketers. So anyone who's nearby and looking for an opportunity within coaching to develop themselves, that's a great starter role there. Ardingly College are looking to develop their cricket coaching program, which is really good. So they're looking for what looks like almost a permanent member of staff in a fairly full-time role. Away from the coaching area, there's always lots of things with ECB in particular, and ECB have got a big reliance on their use of volunteers throughout the country all year round, and they're looking for a couple of new volunteer managers at different venues. Loads of opportunities, lots more coming online later today and a couple more tomorrow as well, so keep an eye on the website and you'll have lots of opportunities coming up for you.
And now it's time on the show to answer your questions. We have questions sent in by listeners to the show, or maybe readers to the Pitch Vision website. And the way that works is we answer a couple of questions on the show, and then we pick the best question of the week, which wins a prize of an online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy at pitchvision.com. And you can send your questions into us by emailing coach@pitchvision.com, and we'll tell you about how to get in touch with the show and other ways towards the end of the show. But first of all, let's answer those questions. And the first question this week is from Sandeep. And Sandeep says, I'm a left-handed medium-fast bowler who plays at domestic level. I bowl a decent pace, but I can't find swing when I try to bowl at my utmost speed. I can only find swing if I change my action, which reduces my speed slightly. Is there any solution for me to continue to bowl at full pace and the ball still swings?
Yeah, well, it sounds like you've got a physics challenge here, more than anything. because either the ball's not in good nick or it's not being presented against the airflow appropriately to get the ball to swing. So I'm not sure it's an action thing. I'm not sure it's an intent thing. I think it's probably an angle of the seam thing, which might come from action, actually. It might come from the fact that you're not quite behind the ball or whatever. But again, a really good starting point for this is video. Another good thing is to get really good at looking after a ball, because if we don't, you know, we could get our seam position absolutely spot on, but if we've not got any contrast between the two sides and it's not in a good condition, then the ball's not going to react to the air in the way that physics can help a fast bowler. So those are the two ports of call, really, and in one of those will be out of sync.
Is there a case, Lavers, that you can use this to your advantage rather than thinking of it as a weakness?
Well, good question. I guess people see something that isn't working and they always feel like it's a weakness. And if you have that ability to control the two, then possibly it's something that you could use for your advantage. Obviously, having that change of pace is a useful thing to have, and having a change of direction, which it sounds like it could be. So a ball that really goes on, and a ball that presumably or shapes away or shapes in or whatever it may be. Way it could be. So I think that's a good way to look at it. It might be something that long term you want to improve upon and you want to fix and you want to make sure that seam's being presented in the way it should be, with that extra effort that's going through your body when you're trying to really crank it up and bowl as fast as you can. But in the meantime, and in the short term, certainly there's no reason you can't use your awareness of the difference between the two deliveries to your advantage. And if you were a left armer, as a left armer, that would be a really good opportunity where you've got your classic left arm swing coming back in, and then that slightly quicker ball that's going to skid straight across, and you could utilise that to your advantage because you can pretty much set the ball out on the same line, and the extra pace will help with the edge as well, which would be nice. And from a right armer's point of view, again, thinking about a right-handed batsman, you've potentially got the opportunity to hit the batsman on the pads while he's on the move if he's not quite ready for the extra pace and the ball coming straight on into him. So yeah, definitely opportunity. Good idea, and good way to think about any kind of obstacle that's in your way. Even though it's not doing the thing you want it to do, is there still something you can take from it that's useful?
Yeah, there's nothing stopping you trying to work on it on the one hand and then using it in games. On the other hand, you know, you can have the best of both worlds, can't you? You can say to yourself, okay, well, I can't do it at the moment, but while I'm working on getting the ball to swing a bit faster, let's just see if I can fool someone with a change of pace. Gareth, I recall you talking about Ryan Sidebottom doing something like that a few years ago.
Yeah, I think a lot of bowlers have, because at certain, you know, at certain times they come across challenges, don't they? And I think that what Sam's talking about earlier, which is really relevant, is that the best bowlers, even if things aren't working well, whether it's their action, whether it's the ball, whether it's the pitch, whatever, will find a way of making themselves competitive. And one of the conversations that we had in the cricket bubble earlier was we're doing a bit of Gary Palmer's four angles, actually, which has been really interesting, you know, getting the ball swinging from different angles and seeing how the technique holds up. And it's been great for our batters, but it's also got our bowlers thinking about how they can use angles to their advantage. So that left arm angle, some of our right arm bowlers have been looking at it and going, well, do you know what, actually I could go around the wicket maybe a little bit more than I do normally to keep myself competitive. So, you know, going back to your statement earlier, David, about if a ball doesn't swing, could it be seen as an advantage, not just as a disadvantage? Well, the answer is, every ball that you bowl, you've got to try and create some sort of deception or some sort of angle or some sort of ability to make the ball move differently than a batter thinks. And you know, certainly Siddy went around the wicket a lot when the ball wasn't swinging, and made absolute havoc for some batters when actually the ball wasn't doing what he wanted to, as a result. And you know, there's loads of bowlers. Malcolm Marshall used to do it, and he
was pretty good again in the swing, but on the odd day it didn't, then he would try and change something up and he'd either go lots of bumpers or he'd go around the wicket and take it across right-handers. So it's about adapting, isn't it? And whether you've got the ball going laterally or not, you want to have deception. And sometimes I see too many bowlers just bowling the same ball from the same place and expecting something magical to happening when there isn't anything magical in the air or off the pitch.
Yeah, it's a conversation I had in the week, actually, with former Scottish international and Yorkshire player and coach, John Blaine. He was talking about craft and the craft of bowling and how it's about more than running in and wanging it down, as Matthew Hoggard once said. It's about creating that, being streetwise and understanding what you can do and using those skills. So don't be disheartened, I guess, is the general message. Work on those things that you feel you've got a weakness in, but also use them to your advantage if you can. That's a name drop for me this week, Gareth. How about that?
That's a good name drop. I like it. Always good to hear Blaney's name come up as well.
Let's move on to the next question, though. And it's one from Chris. And Chris says, I can't stop playing the slog sweep. I hit it well, but also get out to it a lot. What should I do?
That's an interesting one. Can't stop playing it. I assume we're talking about playing it off of spinners predominantly. So, you know, good on you for trying the shot. And it sounds like you're getting a few away, which is great. I think the crucial thing for me about any shot, whether we like it or whether it's not a great shot in our armoury, we've got to work out what each shot is worth. And so for me, the slog sweep was quite important, but I was a bit like you. I used to get out to it occasionally, but I worked out that actually the slog sweep was actually worth 50 runs at every time I got out, which for me was a pretty good batting average. I'd never got near batting an average of 50 in professional cricket, but my slog sweep was worth 50, so that was pretty cool. So I was happy to play and happy occasionally to probably get out to it as long as I was averaging about 50. And it helped me to choose the shots that I used against spinners probably a bit more effectively than I did against seam, where I might have had two or three more options, but I didn't use them quite so well. I wasn't quite so aware of what their value was. So the slog sweep's not a bad one. It's then how you learn to deploy it. So yeah, I'd be interested to find out, you know, when you've been gotten out to it, is it because you've misjudged length and got bowled or top edge one in the air? Is it because you've tried to still go with it when they've got two men out? Trying to break down the dismissals and why those dismissals happen would be really useful. You know, a couple of players that I work with got a brilliant slog sweep, but if you're playing on an 85 metre boundary and they've got 2 7-foot blokes on the boundary, then it's going to be a pretty good effort to get it over the top of them. And then that's a shot selection thing. That's a, right, today I'm not going to use that until I get the opportunity to move one of those fielders away, and then I can get my slog sweep away, which would be amazing. So it's about working out, A, the value of it, what's it worth to you, what's its strike rate, what's its average, and then also thinking about how do you deploy that particular shot. And for the slog sweep, you could do it with any shot that you want. So let's not just limit it to slog sweep. It might be when you come down the wicket. What's your average when you come down the wicket to a spinner? What's your average when you play a pull shot against a spinner? What's your average when you hook against a fast bowler? It's, you know, although we're talking about slog sweeps, it's always worth having a bit of an idea of what the value of your particular shots is worth.
It could also be, Lavers, couldn't it? A symptom of not knowing another option. If you feel, I mean, the classic thing is that a batsman gets a few good balls from a spinner and he thinks, I don't know how I'm going to score off this bloke. Oh, I know, I've got a good slog sweep. I'll smack the next one. And he goes for it.
Yeah, really good point, Matt. It might simply be a case of not his, that his slog sweep isn't good enough. The slog sweep might be, as Gareth has kind of suggested, it might be a fantastically strong part of his game, but it's applying it to the right situation, and maybe he's trying to fit it into the wrong situation at the wrong time. And rather than thinking about how he alters or changes his slog sweep and improves that as a shot, maybe introducing a couple of other shots, so maybe using his depth of crease a little bit more to rotate the strike, or
or maybe looking for a paddle sweep or using his feet to get down the pitch or just finding different ways of manipulating the ball and the bowler who's concerned to try and rotate the strike or to try and up the ante and find more boundaries. So I guess it's going to come down to a slightly larger perspective of what's going on around that dismissal. So is it because of that pressure? Is it because of the dimensions? Is it because of the bowler you're taking on? Gareth has kind of suggested really well there that it would be exactly that. It's try and have a big picture view of why it's happened. Try and think back and work out as much, go pick up as much information as you can from the dismissals you've had, and going forward, actually try and put a bit of information down on paper there if you can, and record the circumstances that were going on. What was the boundary? What was the bowler? What were the conditions of the match? What were you looking for? And in doing that, you might get the answer that actually is another option would be the more suitable thing to go through, and developing your skills elsewhere would be the advantage.
Just to build on that, Sam, you know, keeping a log of that type of information helps you to build an awareness of your own game, but also about venues and opposition and different bowlers. And it was something that Ricky Ponting did incredibly well. So every game that he ever played at any ground against any opposition, he would write down some notes. So an example is he only ever played once at Scarborough. He was probably only ever going to play once at Scarborough against Yorkshire. But he, in his diary, he got 100 at Scarborough for Somerset, played absolutely brilliantly. And in it, one of the learnings was that the wind always comes from one direction on the ground. And as a result of that, he needed to hit with the wind and use the wind to his advantage and then not try to blast the ball into the wind on the other. So he, even though he was only likely to play there once, if he had gone back there again, he could look at his notes on that particular ground and go, right, OK, it's something that I need to bear in mind when I'm playing against a spinner, or maybe taking on a short ball with two men back or whatever the case may be. And whilst I was never as good at that, I knew that if I played at Portsmouth and if I knew that we played on the pitch that we normally played on each year at Burnaby Road, then if a bowler was bowling pavilion end and tried to knock my head off and we needed runs, then I was going to have a good old flap at it, because if I got anything on it, it was going to go over fielders as well. So that sort of freed up my shot selection for me. Every time I played at Portsmouth at one end, I'd have a massive hack at anything that he was trying to knock my block off. And my record there was probably better than anywhere else that I ever played, because my clarity was strong. But Ricky Ponting did that in every single game that he played.
Yeah, I've got a good example of that one as well. Not necessarily related to the slog sweep, but a club ground in South Wales, Aberdare, has a train line running behind it. And I got out once. The bowler was running in as the train was arriving behind the bowler's arm. And I thought, it'll be fine. I'll just focus on the ball. I won't worry about it. And I managed to miss the ball, get out bowled. And as I walked off, I heard John Derrick, of course, former Glamorgan player, just loud enough as I walked off for him to say, "Always wait for the train." So.
He's a sage man, JD, a sage man. He's somebody who's having a bit of a bad run on health at the moment. So anybody out there who knows JD, we wish you all the best, fella.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Speedy recovery. And that is just about all we've got time for on the show this week. But before we leave, we do need to decide on the winner of this week's competition. That is the online coaching course from Pitch Vision Academy and pitchvision.com. And the two questions on offer this week are Sandeep's question about getting the ball to swing at different speeds and Chris's question about slog sweeping. Which one did you prefer this week, Gareth?
I like Chris's question about slog sweeping, because it's probably the first time in a few weeks that we talked about a batting shot that I could play. So that's a pretty selfish and biased reason. But this week, Chris, you win the prize.
Oh, congratulations to you, Chris. And Gareth, if someone was listening into the show and they wanted to send in their question to us, get the question answered and have the chance to win the prize, how could they reach out?
They could give us a call, David, on 0203 239 7543 or drop us an email on coach@pitchvision.com.
That's right, social media is also available. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/pitchvisionacademy, and Twitter at pitchvisionacad, or you can also follow us on the new PitchVision system. Just go over to pitchvision.com and do a search for us in there. If you want to get any of the old shows, they're still hanging about on the website as well. You can stream them, download them, get the show notes, all that fun stuff. Just go to pitchvision.com/academy and click on the podcast link for all the details. That's all for this week. We hope you listen next week, but until then, have a good week. Cheers, Gareth. Cheers, Lavers.
Cheers, fellas.
Thanks, guys.